Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and each week I bring you exciting new guests to talk about pioneering research into various aspects of UFOs and the paranormal. I hope you enjoyed our show last week when our guest talked about cosmology. His name was Saul Silas Fathy, and very interesting individual. We had a great discussion about the Big Bang, black holes, UFOs, the age of the universe, how many stars there are, and it was just really fascinating. He has quite a bit of knowledge. So if you didn't get a chance to catch that show, it is on the archives on the BBS website. So check it out if you get a chance. But tonight, we're moving on to another aspect of the subject, which is UFO abductions. Our guest tonight is Corina Sables, and she has actually been having UFO experiences her whole life, which she remembers in large part consciously. I don't know if that's a blessing or not, but it really does make for an extraordinary story. She's got an enormous amount of evidence to support her claims, including photographs, medical evidence, and lots of other witnesses. And she's written a fascinating book called The Collectors, A Canadian UFO Experience, which basically outlines her experiences to date. And it's a fascinating story. In fact, Whitley Strieber calls her story one of the most credible and detailed stories of alien abduction ever told, and says her book is a must-read for anybody who cares about this strange and powerful human experience. And I have to agree, having read the book and read it actually almost twice now, I'm halfway through the second reading, and it is a very powerful story, very moving, and just incredible. And I'm just so honored to have Corina on the show. She's the type of person who can really tell us some solid information about this subject because she's experienced it. So she's coming from a place not of speculation, but of actual knowledge. So we're very, very lucky to have her on tonight. Now, Corina, thank you so much for coming on to the show.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure.
Yeah, I want to thank you also for, putting together this book. It's really quite a powerful read, and I mean, I cried, I laughed. It's an amazing story. It's not a lot of books out there about, the subject written by the people who've actually experienced it. So thank you so much for having the courage to do that.
You're welcome. But actually, I never planned on writing a book. I've never been a writer, never thought I could write a book. I think bottom line is it was coming from my heart and what we truly experienced. So in one way, it was easy to put it down on paper. It was easy to write and tell my story. In another way, it was probably the most difficult thing I've ever done because it was, first of all, coming out and telling a million people out there what was truly going on after being ridiculed for many years. But there was something so strong inside of me that told me, I have to get the word out. I know there must be other people like us that are experiencing this and don't know what to do with this information, don't know who to talk to, do not know how to handle what their children are going through, because that was my main concern. I mean, it started, with us around the age of five, but once it was happening with my children, then it became very personal for me, and there was a lot of fear, there was a lot of anger. I wasn't sure how I was going to handle this. So writing the book, instead of, letting fear and anger, control me or paralyze me, I decided to make it work for me and simply just decide that's it. I'm going to write the book. I'm going to run a support group and not have to worry about what people are going to think anymore. This is our story as God is our witness, and it has to come out. Right. So I'm at an age where I don't care anymore what people think, to be quite honest. I'm just hoping that somehow my story will help, even if it's only a couple of families, but at least it will help someone.
Right.
You know, just to let them know they're not alone.
Well, it certainly helped me to get a broader understanding of what's going on with this whole phenomena. And I think, you know, my research has shown that there's probably 1 in 40, 1 in 50 people who have been on board one of these UFOs. So I think it's a much more common experience than people realize. And books like yours.
I agree with you totally.
I think books like yours are really sorely needed. In fact, I just released a book for children about UFOs because, you know, what you were saying, so many of the witnesses that I've interviewed, so many people that I've talked to, their experiences start as children, and they have nowhere to turn to. Their parents almost universally do not believe them, although they may be supportive. They're not supportive in a way that these children need.
That's right. Exactly right. I know for my children, had I not had the experiences and knew what was going on, it would have been absolutely horrific for them. I mean, as it was so traumatic. But at least I was willing to listen, and I could, you know, I could try and console them and tell them, you know, look, this has happened to Mommy. But, you know, even though they do these terrible things, I've always been brought back, your Mommy. And then, you know, my son would pipe up and say, yeah, but don't you remember, Mommy? I woke up in the middle of the night when I was very little, and you were gone. They've taken you. They took you away from us. You know, so it's very heart-wrenching for parents, but at least if they can speak to each other about it, there's a form of not therapy, but at least some kind of help. Someone's listening.
Right, exactly.
What we do need, though, I mean, my greatest wish is that, you know, physicians and lab technicians and preachers and people like that are going to start listening to these shows and are going to start taking us seriously and know that this is truly happening out there. And rather than be ridiculed and stuff, we need some help. I mean, people get raped, you know, every day. They get help for that. Well, we get our minds raped. We get our bodies raped. And there's no one to help us. There's no one to talk to. You know, all we are is ridiculed, and people are cruel to us, and they just don't understand that you can't experience something like that and get up in the morning and make breakfast and have a normal life. It just doesn't happen. Once you've had this kind of experience, I mean, it's changed you forever.
Right. It's hard to think of another experience that would be more traumatic than, you know, having, you know, this type of abduction experience.
Well, you know, I think people have to realize that it affects all aspects of your life. It's the mental, the emotional, the physical. We've lost so many friends over the years. We've even had family members ridicule us behind our backs. We've lost jobs because of ill health due to, you know, having so many visitations at one time. At one point, my children and I woke up with sunburns, you know, on our bodies. We call them sunburns, for lack of a better word. We've had radiation marks, imperfect triangular marks on our necks, on our backs. We've had holes, punctured holes in our body that, you know, was very strange because there was not an ounce of blood on the sheets or on our body, but there was literally a hole in our body. So, you know, you can't, as I said before, you cannot experience things like that and be normal, quote-unquote, ever again.
Right. Well, you know, one of the most powerful parts of your book, I think, is the beginning and how you tell your whole childhood story, because a lot of people don't remember things in the detail that you do. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you could kind of lead us through what your childhood was like experiencing this stuff.
Well, for myself, I think I was around the age of 5, probably between 4 and 5, and my earliest memory is, you know, I would always really be afraid to go to bed at night. It would be, Mom and Dad, can you please check for monsters under my bed, in my closet? Can you please leave the light on? Don't shut the door. And, you know, all I kept getting was, you know, you're having nightmares. It's okay, honey. You're going to be all right. We need to shut the light off. You're going to be fine. next thing I know, you know, I'd have the blankets up to my face and just my eyes kind of peeking out because I knew what was coming. And this bright bluish white light would come through my bedroom window, and the next thing I knew, this face was in my window. You know, pear-shaped, large black eyes, hardly a nose to speak of, and this small slit of a mouth, no ears, no hair, nothing. And, you know, last thing I would remember is this thing coming at me. I would get up in the morning and try and tell my parents what had happened through the night, and my father would always come back with the same thing. Oh, honey, it was probably a wildcat from the forest out back. It was probably this was, and I, you know, I would come back and say, but Daddy, the kitty had no ears. You know, there was no fur. So, you know, you'd think at that point, you know, somebody would catch on. But of course, I think, I don't know how to explain this. I think they just didn't want to really go there. They probably had an inkling of what was going on, because from what I've gathered, it goes from generation to generation. And I do believe that my mother was involved. She died at a very early age under very strange circumstances, and had, you know, purpley large red circular burn marks on her back when she woke up. And she died 2 to 3 months later. She died a very short time later, and she was only 30. So I think she was the one that was involved.
Right.
And, you know, at the age of 10, I remember specifically, we were living in Montreal at the time, and my brother and I decided to go and play in the park, which was just across the street from our house. And it was in the middle of the day, nice sunny day. We're out there. I think we were out at the park maybe five minutes, and it was quite busy because it was so nice out, I guess, and all of a sudden, I said to my brother, I said, wow, do you feel that humming, that vibration in your tummy? And he said, yeah. He said, what is that? Is there a truck driving by? I said, no trucks are driving by. It was louder than that anyways, like not something we could hear. It was something we could feel.
Right.
And then he turned to me and he said, well, yeah, but he said, what's with those people? They're all pointing up above us. So, of course, we looked up. And there was a flying saucer just hovering above us, above this park. Now, it was low enough and stayed long enough that many people saw this. There was a lot of witnesses. Some people who lived on the street actually went back inside their house and came back out with cameras and had time to take a picture of this thing. So it's not like it was just here for a second or a blip in the sky. This was really quite noticeable. A lot of people saw it. And
wow.
it just went on and on from there. So, it wasn't, we had never, I mean, till my 30s, I had never seen a UFO movie, an alien movie. I'd never read any books on anything like that. I lived in ignorance, wondering what was going on with me. Did I have some kind of mental illness? Was I going crazy? Was it nightmares? I mean, I didn't know what to think. And then, I would think I was about 32 or 33 years old. I lived near the Vancouver area in BC, Canada at the time. And I think we lived about a block and a half away from a military base. So I had seen a couple of things in the sky at night, and I thought, oh, it's probably planes or something from the military base. And then one night I had a friend over, probably about the end of July, something like that, very warm night, no moon that night, just nothing but stars. And we were out having tea out back in my backyard, and this fellow was about, I guess, 55 at the time, and just having tea, talking and stuff. And all of a sudden he said, I feel this weird feeling in my abdomen. He says, like, this strange vibration. And I thought, I went right back to when I was 10 years old. I mean, I was instantly there. And I thought, oh, my God, they're here. And then I said, well, I didn't even really say anything. I think we both looked up in the sky for some reason at the same time. And we saw this gigantic ship, whatever you want to call it. It was boomerang-shaped. It was over the size of a football field. It was huge. And it was so low to the ground that I actually felt claustrophobic. It took up most of the sky at that point. And
wow.
The only way that we could see its shape was the fact that it blocked out the stars in that shape. So it was almost, it looked like a cloaked ship of some kind. And it just stopped on a dime. There was no lights, no sound whatsoever, and this thing just stayed there. And he just totally freaked out. He says, I'm going back in. I can't handle this. You've got to come in. You can't stay outside. And I said, no way. I said, if that thing stayed there, I said, I'm going to find out what that is and what they want. He said, you're crazy. Come back. Come back inside. I said, no, you go ahead. I'll stay here. Now, according to me, to what I remember, I was only out there maybe at the most 2.5-3 minutes. Max, something like that. But when I came back in, like, it was there, I was looking at it, and then poof, it was gone. And I went back inside, and he said, oh my God, where have you been? And I said, don't be silly. I said, I was outside. Where do you think I've been? He said, no way. He says, I went out and looked outside everywhere around the place, and he says, you weren't around. And I said, well, that's silly. I was just standing out back where we were sitting before. And I said, besides, I've only been gone 2 minutes. What's the problem? He said, no, you don't get it. He says, you've been gone for 45 minutes.
Wow.
So according to him, I was gone 45 minutes. According to me, I was only gone 2 minutes, three at the most. However, after that happened, after that sighting, that's when all hell broke loose in our lives for the children and I. The children were around 6, 5, and 6, and things started happening to them after that, and it just got really bad, really bad.
Well, had you realized at this point that you weren't the only person in the world having these types of experiences? Had you connected it to the whole
world? I had no idea at that point. In fact, that was my first contact with any kind of UFO researcher or anything. I didn't know where to call to talk, to tell somebody about what we had seen. So actually what I did is I phoned the planetarium in Vancouver, and I asked them, I said, has anyone seen something strange in the sky tonight in Vancouver? Because I said, I just saw the strangest thing. And he said, the people you want to talk to is UFOBC. Ask for Graham Conway. So that's what I did. I phoned UFOBC in Vancouver, and right away they confirmed to me that they had something like 12 or 14 other people call regarding this sighting of a boomerang-shaped ship that same night, around the same time. So
wow.
It was confirming what I'd seen. Then he started, you know, of course, being interested. He said, have you ever seen anything else like that in your life? And I said, well, actually, it's funny you should ask. I said, when I was a child, you know, I did see things. And I said, some of them really scared me. And then they sent out what they called a field researcher, or it was somebody that worked with them anyways, and he came out and interviewed the children and I, and then he asked me a strange question. He said, do you have a scoop mark, any marks on your body? And I said, a what? He said, a scoop mark. And I said, well, what does it look like? What is it? So he proceeded to tell me, and I went, oh, my God. I said, that's what I have on my leg? So I pulled up my pant leg, and he looked on my calf, and he said, yep, that's a scoop mark. And I said, no, you're not serious. You're not telling me what I think you're telling me. And he said, I'm afraid so. That's what it looks like.
And must have been freaking
then
out.
So began, you know, my opening up to things.
Wow. So before that, you hadn't even really considered that these were extraterrestrials?
And I had no idea. I didn't know what I was dealing with. Nothing at all. No.
So is that the conclusion you've reached now, that you're dealing with extraterrestrial beings?
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt in my mind, 100%.
Right. You know, that's just amazing about your story, is you have all these incidents where, you know, people are looking for you and you're not where you're supposed to be, and which pretty much shatters anyone's theory that this is imaginary or, you know, fantasy prone or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention, you know, the medical evidence that you have.
Well, yeah, that's another thing. I mean, I'll never forget, the first time. First of all, the doctors had told me that I would probably never get pregnant, that it would be a miracle if I got pregnant. And a few years later, I think I was 25 when I had my first child. But just before that child was born, I got pregnant. And my husband and I were just like, wow, you know, here they said I couldn't have a child. Here I am pregnant. This is great. Went to the doctor, had it confirmed. Everything was going well. At about 3.5 months of my pregnancy, woke up in the middle of the night. Something was very wrong. Tried to wake up my husband. Of course, he was out like a light. I couldn't wake him up for anything. Ended up going to the hospital. They did an ultrasound, and there was nothing. There was no baby, nothing left. And I know for a fact I did not lose a fetus. I was awake, and I did not. Do you know what I mean? It just disappeared overnight.
Right, right. Well,
yeah.
This is a story I've heard before, actually. So, you know, it's not super common, but I've heard it enough to recognize the pattern. And so this is basically part of the ET agenda. They're creating hybrids.
I believe so.
So do you have memories of seeing any of these so-called hybrids?
The one memory that sticks out in my mind very strongly, and I think it's because I was so young, it really affected me on a deep level. I was probably about 7 years old, and my memory is this. I'm in a very strange room with subdued lighting. Can't see where the lights are coming from. It's kind of like where the wall meets the ceiling or something. And the room is round. And I'm thinking, in my mind as a child, I'm thinking, this is a really strange hospital room. Because I'd been in hospitals before when I was younger, like for my tonsils, and I had seen what a hospital was like. And this looked like a hospital, but not. It was different. And I was in my nighty, and I was sitting on this very cold metal table. There was no sheets, no nothing around. And across from this table that I was sitting on was this wall. And out of the wall protruded this kind of table, this shelf. And the next thing I know, there's this very strange, very scary-looking baby on this table. Now, from what I can remember, there were no clothes, no diapers, nothing like that. It was just a naked little baby, very scrawny body, huge head, and large eyes, little slit for a mouth, and it scared the daylights out of me. But at the same time, I felt bad. I felt sorry for this baby because it looked like it was dying. It was so lethargic, like I knew something was wrong, and I had a sense, something was giving me a feeling that I was supposed to pick up this baby and, I don't know, nurture it or something, but I just couldn't. I was too scared, and I felt so guilty. I felt so bad about that. The very next memory of what I can recall is the baby is gone. I'm looking at the shelf, but the baby is gone, and all I remember is something white going past me, but I can't remember what it is. I'm looking to my left, and there's a doorway, but with no door, and it looks like a cathedral entrance. So it's rounded. It's not square. And all of a sudden, I have this bad feeling, and this tall being, which looked like a gray but taller and more bony structure on the head area, starts coming at me, and I knew. I thought, oh, God. It's the doctor. I knew because I think he'd been around me before. And my daughter has also mentioned him when she was 6 years old, where one night I woke up and all of a sudden thought, something's wrong. I have to get to the hallway, my children. And I get out there and I see a gray going into my daughter's bedroom. And I thought, okay, I'm wide awake. I'm not dreaming. This is real. I see you, and I'm going to get you this time. Don't you dare go near my daughter. And
wow.
I went running into a room, and, of course, there's nothing there. And I thought, oh, my God, I'm having these vivid nightmares. I'm losing my mind. I've got to stop this. Went back to bed. In the morning, went downstairs to have breakfast, and my son looks at me, and he goes, Mom, he said, I saw something really weird going to Nikki's bedroom last night, but he said, I was too scared to scream. I just pulled the blankets over my face. I'm so sorry. I should have called you. And then she overheard him and said, oh, she says, nah. She says, those were the little white ghosts. They always come and visit me. They're okay. They're not bad. But she said, I'm really scared of that pumpkin head man. And I looked at her and I said, pumpkin head man? What do you mean, honey? Well, he's got a really big head, and he's real mean. He told me he was the doctor. And I thought, oh, my God, here we go again.
All right. You included a drawing.
Mm-hmm.
In the book, yeah, your children's drawings are really, you know, powerful to see in the book.
Well, yeah, especially with Nicole with the pumpkin head man, because up to that point, she was only drawing stick people, and I thought, whoa, like, I mean, this must have really affected her, for her to be able to do something like this. So a lot of things have happened with the children, and, you know, you don't always have a camera around. You don't, you know, sometimes they're so traumatized, you don't want to make them, you know, ask them to draw these things because, you know, I mean, they're traumatized enough. But at one point I felt that it was going to help them someday, or maybe help their children, and that it was important that we documented everything. And I think I was right, because my first grandchild was just born 10 weeks ago now, and he's doing fine now, but he had some problems in the beginning. But my daughter was visited already when she was close to 4 months with him. And we remember the night, and it wasn't pleasant. So it looks like my grandson is involved as well.
Good Lord. This is, I think, probably the very moving part of your book is you dealing with this phenomena and with your children. Like, after you saw that boomerang ship in July 91, your son had he woke up screaming. You ran into his room?
Yes. As I said earlier, the once the boomerang ship came around, all hell broke loose. And one of the things that happened was my son, I think at the time, was between 8 and 9 years old, and I heard this blood-curdling scream in the morning, ran into his bedroom, and he was on his back with his back just arched. And I said, honey, what's wrong? What's wrong? And he just said, oh, my back, Mom, my back. You've got to look at my back. What's wrong with me? And finally, eventually, what he ended up telling me was during the night he had heard these loud beeping sounds. And he says, that's all I remember. And I remember feeling scared, but I didn't know why. And he says, and then I was out. And then now I just woke up and I've got this pain in my back. When I turned him around, I almost threw up because I just could not believe what I was looking at. There was literally a hole in his back right beside his spine that was probably, it's almost the size of a Canadian dime. So you're looking at probably a large eraser, a round eraser from a big pencil. And there was no blood on the sheets, no blood on his body, but I could literally see inside his body, like there was a deep, deep hole. And I thought, oh, my God, what do I do with this? And I was trying to keep, you know, my wits about me, because I didn't want to frighten him any more than what he looked like already. I grabbed him in a blanket or something, took him to a doctor right away. But, you know, unfortunately, this is what we had to deal with. We come in, the first thing the doctor said is, did he fall out of bed onto a toy? No, he didn't. There's no toys around, things like that. Well, how could he get this, wake up with something like that? Well, I don't know. That's why I'm here. So finally, he hummed and hawed. To make the long story short, oh, my gosh, I'll never forget this as long as I live. The doctor turned to me and said, I'm not sure what this is, but I'm going to take a guess and say that I think your son has chicken pox. And my son turned to the doctor and said, you've got to be kidding. Chicken pox? He said, I've got a hole in my back, and it hurts.
Wow.
So, unfortunately, we don't get that much help. And even when we do, you know, have burn marks on our bodies or anything, you can't tell the doctors, well, you know, we think aliens came last night, or this happened, or that happened. I mean, they put us away in the white jackets.
Right.
I would lose my children. I mean, that was my greatest fear, was that the government was going to come in and take my children away from me.
That's scary. You know, Corey and I have talked to many people who've had pretty much the same type of experience. One lady I spoke with, she had an argument with the doctor because he kept telling her that she had had surgery, and she didn't want to tell him. You know, and he pointed to, like, laser marks on her body. He's like, well, you've obviously had surgery, hernia surgery or something. And she says, no, I never have. And she couldn't tell him the truth. So I feel for you.
I can really relate with that poor lady because we've gone through the same kinds of things. I've been told, well, you had surgery there. No, I haven't. Well, yes, you have. And I swore up and down. I said, look through my medical records. I have not had surgery in that area. So I know what she means, what she's going through. You know, also, I don't know about other female abductees. I don't know if you've heard or not, but for myself, and I believe this is because of these beings being around me, I have had so many, ever since I was 16, I've had nothing but ovarian cysts, ovarian problems, uterus problems. They told me that there was so much scar tissue from surgeries, you know, when they first looked in. And I said, I've never had surgeries before. This was the first surgery I had. And they said, oh, no, it can't be. You've got scarring inside. And, I mean, the strangest things would happen, you know. They told me, oh, you have ovarian cysts. We're going to go in. We're going to remove them. And I'd wake up and they'd go, well, we have to remove the left ovary, but the right one is okay, and then vice versa. And then the next surgery I'd have a few months later, say, oh, yeah, both of your ovaries are healthy. And I'm thinking, look, either they're nuts or I'm not understanding something right here. You know?
Right.
Anyway, so I think a lot of female problems are due to them, you know, doing things to us for sure.
So would you say that your health has been pretty negatively affected by all of this?
Oh, absolutely. 100%. I think, I'll tell you, probably one of the worst things that happened for me was July 31st, 2003, here in Kelowna, in British Columbia. And a girlfriend of mine had come up from Vancouver to visit. She was looking to move up here, was looking for rentals and jobs. So we're sitting at the computer, it's about 5 to midnight, she's leaving the next morning back from Vancouver. She says, you know, let's look at more rentals. I said, okay, so we're on the computer, and very suddenly, out of the blue, I don't know what happened to her, she says to me, let's go out stargazing. I said, are you kidding? I said, it's late, I'm really tired, and besides, you're leaving tomorrow morning. I said, let's do it when you come back next week. She was so insistent that we ended up leaving right away, 5 minutes later. So at midnight, I'm locking my door. Here I am going out stargazing with this friend. I have no idea where we're going to go. My car is just kind of driving itself. We ended up driving up this one area just out of Kelowna, and all of a sudden parked the car to the right side of the road, got out of the vehicle right away. She got out with binoculars, and I got out with 1.5 million candlelight. There had been a lot of cougar and bear sightings in that area for that time of year. So I thought, well, better take this light and just make sure there's nothing walking around, because there was no street light, no moon, no houses around at that time. So it was black, nothing but a blanket of stars. And so very dark. When I noticed there was nothing, I turned off the light. And right away she said, whoa, she says, there's three stars up here in a triangular formation moving erratically. This is really weird. You got to look at this. And I said, well, stars don't do that. I said, it must be a plane or something. And then she says, oh, wait a minute. It's changing. I said, what do you mean it's changing? She says, well, look up. It's kind of imploded, and now it's a bright neon green-looking circle or oval thing. So I looked up, and sure enough, I mean, you know, up above us in the sky was this bright neon green-colored whatever it was, and it just stayed there. It just hovered there. Now, it was quite warm that night. We were also having major, major forest fires everywhere. All of the Okanagan was just, it was like living through hell. There was fires everywhere. So it was quite warm. The air was kind of a smoky smelling, and all of a sudden, everything changed. It was like this cold, musty air came down, And the coyotes just went berserk. It was like there was a zillion, you know, coyotes all around us, and they were all howling at the same time. And I thought, whoa, this is really weird. I had goosebumps all over my body, and I said, something's not right here. And she says, yeah, I agree, something's not right. And for some reason, I don't know what it was, whether I heard something or whatever, I can't remember now, I turned on my light and pointed it down in front of us, in front of the vehicle, to the left side of the road. And there were five sets of eyeballs. And no matter how many times I tell this, no matter how many times I think of it, it still affects me to this day. And,
wow.
You know, at first I thought, is it deer? Is it bear? What's out there? And then, you know, reality kicks in, and you're looking at the eyes and going, whoa, wait a minute. These eyes are way too big, and this is not an animal. It's too high off the ground, blah, blah, blah. The last thing I did after this, when I saw the eyes and I realized what they were, I tried to turn to her and I tried to yell for her to get back in the car. But my voice was like this fear whisper. So I think the fear, I was in such terror that my voice would have barely come out. And I tried to turn around to get back into the vehicle, but it was like moving through quicksand in slow motion. It was the strangest thing I've ever experienced. But the terror inside of me was so great, I honestly thought I was going to have a heart attack. It was just unbelievable. I could barely breathe. And I kept trying to grab the door handle, and my hand kept slipping off of it. And I was just like, the fear was growing and growing. All of a sudden, next thing I know, we're both back in the vehicle. And she's going, come on, get it started, get it started. And I said, I'm trying. But the key, I said, nothing's happening. But the lights were going on and off, and yet the car was not, like, really weird stuff was going on. Anyways, I said a small prayer. Next thing I know, okay, bam, it started. I did a quick U-ey across the road, and we went back home.
Wow.
I'll tell you, the next morning, we were so freaked out, we didn't even want to talk about it. We both felt kind of sick. I had this terrible sharp pain in my head that was just killing me. I said, we've got to go to bed, you know, like, let's just not talk about it. Let's go to bed. The next morning we get up. I was the first one to get up, and I'm having coffee, tea, whatever, sitting at the table, and I thought, geez, my chest really hurts, and my foot. So I looked, and I had this huge circular, like almost like a perfect circle on my chest area. And I had a bruise under my right foot, on the ball of my foot. Now, the worst thing was that I had severe nausea, and the pain in my head was just excruciating. So I remember taking two Tylenols to try and get rid of it. A few minutes later, my girlfriend gets up, and she's walking down the hall. And as she's walking down the hall, I said, good morning. I said, how are you doing? She says, oh, man, I feel so sick. I don't know what's wrong with me. Next thing I know, her nose is bleeding, but I mean, not just a trickle. This girl is really bleeding from her nose. I quickly got up, got her a towel, put it up against her face, and she said, look, she says, I'm just going to go have a quick shower. And I said, I think you need to get home as soon as possible and go see a doctor. So she goes in and has a shower, comes back out and says, can you check my back, please? There's something wrong with me. It really hurts back there. So I looked at her back, and of course I knew right away because I'd seen those radiation burns before on my children's bodies and on my body. She had a perfect circular, large burn mark at the bottom of her back, just above her bottom. I've got pictures of it, but I've never been given permission to display them on the internet, so I have not done that. However, I have sent them to a couple of UFO researchers just so that they could confirm, you know, what I was saying.
Right.
But she ended up going home, and when she did see a doctor, she called me and said, you won't believe what the doctor said. He looked at me and he said, you know, if I didn't know any better, I'd swear that was a radiation burn. But he says, how could you get a radiation burn? And
oh,
left
dear.
It at that. He gave her some ointment to put on it and gave her some antibiotics and said that if she developed a fever or anything like that, she was supposed to contact him right away. So it was kind of left at that. She came back for a while, got a job, stayed with me for a little while. We both lost a tremendous amount of hair. Like, I mean, we had very long hair, down to our hips at the time, very thick. And it was like going through chemotherapy. We were finding hair everywhere. My daughter was even laughing. She says, God, Mom, you know, you're going to go bald at this rate. Well, I almost did. We had severe nausea. We had vomiting. Both her and I lost between 50 and 60 pounds within 3 months.
Wow.
3.5 months.
That's good.
The pain in my head was so severe that I ended up actually in the hospital just before Christmas. So July, August, September, October, November. So about 5 months later, not quite 5 months, I ended up in the hospital one night. And my temperature was down to 34.2 instead of 36.8 being normal. My potassium levels had crashed. My liver enzymes were sky high, yet I've never drank, done drugs, don't have hepatitis or anything like that. The white count was high. I mean, everything was totally out of whack. It was insane. So they put me in for about 7 days, kept me on an intravenous because I was totally dehydrated or something. Potassium, antibiotics, major antibiotics through the intravenous, and morphine for the pain in my head. So they said, okay, we need to do a test. And they did a test on my head and came up and said, well, we have something to tell you. We've seen from the test that you've had some brain injury. I said, excuse me? Brain injury? I said, I've never had a brain injury in my life. And they said, well, yes, you did, and you are now experiencing some petite mal seizures. I said, no way. Get away from me. Like, you know, I don't want to hear this. And they said, well, you are, and we might have to put you on medication. So to me, that was a real shock. It was like, wait a minute, you know, this can't be happening. What did they do to my brain? What did they do to me? What happened? The worst part was, what confirmed it a little bit was my girlfriend screamed at me on the way back, which I neglected to tell you, and said to me, you've got to look at the clock. We haven't been here an hour. We just got here 5 minutes ago. And I said, well, the clock's wrong. You know, you're imagining things. But according to the clock, it was about an hour and 7 minutes missing time that we couldn't account for. Then we had the body marks. And then the weirdest part happened. Brian Veik from HBCC UFO up in Houston, B.C., up north, apparently, I contacted him. He wrote something in the local newspaper and asked for, you know, were there anyone that has seen blah, 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 at such and such a date, such and such a time in the morning. Well, he got at least 9 eyewitnesses who came back. They knew nothing about my girlfriend and I at this point, nothing. And they confirmed a bright green neon glowing object in the sky, same area where we had our experience. One woman actually tried to take a picture and her camera wouldn't work. Another one saw a white beam come out of this ship and go back up inside. I mean, there were so many eyewitnesses, it was ridiculous. And that's when I thought, oh my God, something really did happen that night.
Amazing. Well, everyone, you're listening. UFOs and the paranormal over our heads. Our guest tonight is Corina Sables, and we're talking about her new book, The Collectors, A Canadian UFO Experience. And she's sharing her very amazing stories. Now, Corina, I mean, would you characterize the ETs that you're dealing with as indifferent to humans or mean or even evil? I mean, would you stop these experiences from happening if you could?
Oh, absolutely. I don't think they don't care how it affects us, what they do to us. They have a job to do. They come and do it, and they don't care how it affects you. And then they leave. you know, I have two things that I keep going between, and I'm not sure if this is part of the puzzle or not, because this is a giant puzzle, and each one of us has a piece of that puzzle, I'm sure. But my idea is either these beings are like our scientists here on Earth. We go to the Amazon forest, we find a new species, what do? We shoot it, put it to sleep, we take a tooth, some blood, we tag it, and then we watch it for the rest of its life to see how it migrates and things like that. Maybe that's what they are. Maybe they're scientists from another planet or another dimension. Then there's the other side of me that says, you know what, we're fooling around so much with genetics and things, maybe it's us in the future, and we've come back through time to try and fix up the mess we've made. Like, I'm not sure who they are, what they are, where they're from, but I can tell you one thing. The greys that have dealt with my children and I are not nice, okay? These guys are not here for our better good, that's for sure. It's not like they came and fixed a problem, a medical problem in us. They caused medical problems in us. So right. It's not been a positive experience for us.
So have you also had some, I guess you'd call it government involvement. I mean, you had those experience with the helicopters hovering over your home.
Oh, yeah. We've been buzzed by black helicopters. Now, I'm talking really black. The windows are blacked out. There is no signs, no letters, no numbers on these helicopters. It's just black. And this has happened about three times in our lives now.
Wow. So is that the only indication you've had of, you know, government interest in your case?
There were other strange things. One that comes to mind was when the children were a bit younger. I was probably in my mid-30s. I remember this car. It was a black car, and there was a man sitting in it outside of our complex. And he'd always be pretending to read a newspaper. And I'd seen him there, you know, several times. And one day I got so upset with this man. As I drove slowly by his vehicle, because his window was down a bit, I just didn't quite come to a full stop because I didn't know who he was and I was a little bit afraid, but I wanted to show him that I wasn't afraid. Mm-hmm. And I kind of yelled out my window and I said, if you so much as ever show your face around here again or come near my children, I said, you will pay the price. I said, I will contact somebody. And I took off really quick because I was afraid of who he was or what he might do. But I have to tell you, he never showed up at that spot again, ever.
That was very courageous, actually.
Well, I don't know. Sometimes, people say, man, you've got so much courage or something. And I think, no, maybe I'm just crazy. You know, like, I've come out and really, you know, told the world of what we've been through, and I know what people must think. I mean, good Lord, I know it sounds unbelievable, but please trust me when I tell you. I mean, I'm a very spiritual person. I've had a near-death experience. My connection with God is very strong, so for people to tell me that I'm lying, how would it help me? Why would I lie about something like that? You know,
yeah.
It doesn't get you anything.
Well, what's astonishing to me is the details in your story. Some of them are very rare, but I've heard them before. There was one lady who I interviewed who had been having a lot of experiences, and she told me about one time she walked up to her car, and all the door locks started going up and down by themselves.
That's in my book. I had the same thing happen. The kids were laughing like crazy, and I had tears running down my face thinking, oh, my God, the children think it's funny, but I know what's going on. It's because they're around, and I do affect electrical things. I mean, when I first met Graham Conway from UFOBC, he asked me to meet him at a public restaurant and to meet in the parking lot, and it was getting nighttime out, and the lights were on. I'm telling you, I drove into that parking lot, and every light bulb went out. And
wow.
He started laughing, and as I walked out of my vehicle, he said, wow, you sure know how to make an entrance. And laughingly, I turned around, and I said, wait till you see my exit. So that was his first clue that, yeah, something's not right with this woman.
Huh. Now, has there ever been anything positive about these encounters? I mean, have you gotten anything good out of it?
Whew. Anything good. Well, one thing, they definitely opened up our minds to new possibilities, new realities. I mean, you can't help but grow from it or whatever, because, I mean, you have to face fears and terror. Maybe somehow it makes you a stronger person, but I'll tell you something. I have to be honest with you. There were times when I was younger and things were happening, I contemplated suicide, and I'm sure that some people have actually carried it out. I didn't, because I couldn't do that to my children, but the thoughts were there sometimes, yes. I haven't had them for many years, thank God, but I did go through a period like that.
Wow. Yeah, that's why I'm so glad you've written this book, because, I mean, this story does be told. But you also included letters from your children in the book, which I thought was
Well, I needed to know, like, even though we've discussed things over the years, and that I really wanted to know what was truly in their hearts and soul. I said, you know, Mommy's always told you, please be very honest. No matter what, always tell the truth. Don't ever lie. And they were brought up that way. So I came to them and I said, I need the honest truth from your heart. Tell me how this has affected you and how you feel. And so they wrote the letters, and I thought it was very important that I include that, because maybe it will help some other parents and their children to understand where the child is coming from.
Well, when your son decided he wanted to move out for a while, that was, touched my heart.
Yeah, I thought I wanted to die. Him and I are so connected, so close, all my children, but Christopher's always been, I don't know, we have a very strong connection, and we're very intuitive, and we have that intuitive connection as well. If something's going on with him, I can be hundreds and hundreds of miles away from him. I'll phone him and he'll say, yeah, you're right, Mom, or I was just going to phone you, and things like that. And when he decided to leave, oh my God, part of me just died. It was one of the toughest times in my life.
Wow. Well, how do they feel
again,
about you?
It was because of them. Pardon?
How do they feel about you going public with your experiences?
You know what? I'm so proud of them. My children, I mean, I dedicated that book to my children. I'm telling you, their courage and understanding is absolutely phenomenal. They're totally supportive, and, you know, they agree with me that it is a good thing, that we need to come out and share our story to help other people like ourselves. And, you know, they're at a point, I think, where sometimes it bothers them because of certain family members, especially for my son on his father's side. He's been ridiculed, and they've ridiculed me for many years. So it's tough for him because he loves me so much, and he doesn't like to see that happen. But at the same time, he's going, yes, Mom, good for you. You just keep it up. Get out there and do your lectures and presentations and, you know, keep doing what you're doing. It's wonderful. So I do have their support, thank God, because that does help.
Right. So what do you think is the future of this whole phenomenon? I mean, what do you think the ET's agenda is with humanity?
You know, I'm not sure. I'm like the rest of the UFO researchers and the other people. I don't have all the answers. I wish I had more answers for people. I have some feelings, some thoughts. I do believe that they are definitely making a hybrid race. For what reason, what purpose, I'm not sure. I do believe that somehow we have something that they need, that they no longer have or lost or whatever. I remember specifically in one experience, I was inside a ship, and there was this huge column in the middle of this room, and there were hundreds and hundreds of what looked like thin, long drawers that made up this column. To make the long story short, I opened up one of these drawers, and I asked out loud to this tall being that was there, I said, what is inside there? What's in there? I know I'm getting a feeling that this is very important. What's in there? And telepathically, in my mind, I heard him say, first of all, he said, it is not for you to know at this time. It's some stupid thing like that. And I said, well, you don't know me very well. I'm a very curious person, and I want to know what's in there. I know this is important. And then he replied, not even annoyed. It was just kind of a bland response, and it was totally telepathic again. He said, it is the essence of man. Whoa, I wish I'd never asked it, because, you know, ever since then I'm thinking, what did he mean, the essence of man? It frightened me to no end. I thought, is it sperms? Is it eggs? Or is it DNA? Is it our souls? What does he mean by the essence of man? So to this day, I've never had an answer for that. I don't know what he meant by the essence of man, but I know that it scared me, and it still does.
Right. Well, they're not very communicative, the ET. They don't give you a lot of information, do they?
No, they don't. Not for us, they haven't.
Nope. Well, you know, Karina, we're approaching the last few minutes of our show. I wondered if you had, you know, wanted to talk about anything we haven't covered, or if you had any messages for our listeners out there.
Please, anyone that's out there that's had any experiences like us, please do not be afraid. Please come forward. Tell your stories. This is so important, and you probably have so much knowledge that will help us put all of this together and understand who and what we're dealing with and how to deal with coming things. Because personally, I do believe that we will see more and more shifts. There will be more and more coming.
Wow.
So
do you think they'll ever show themselves?
Story.
Do you think they'll ever show themselves openly to the public?
Oh, I think there will definitely come a time. Well, they are already to a point. And
right.
They did try, you know, in certain areas. But what do? First thing we do is we shoot them down, right? So, I mean, they have to... They have their agenda, but I think that they have such technology. I think they're way ahead of us in some ways, but I don't know. I think it's going to take a while yet, but yes, I think that they will do that.
Wow. Well, do you want to give out your website? You have a website that people can go to?
Actually, I'm sorry to say I shut down my website for a little while because I'm just in the middle of moving. But it should be coming back up within a month. So there is one place, if they do want to buy the book, The Collectors, they can go through Trafford Publishing, which is online, or Amazon.com. And I'll definitely, if they want my email, they can have my email address. They can email me if they like. And I can also give out a phone number. So it's whatever you think would be best.
Well, whatever information you want to share is
okay. Email address is spiritlight, L-I-G-H-T, at shaw.ca.
Okay.
And I live in Kelowna, B.C., so my phone number will be in under the directory.
All right. Well, wow. Karina, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your story. It's just really a moving story and very profound and important. And thank you so much for writing this book, The Collectors. It's truly an amazing book.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure. I'm sorry I talked so much, but you got me going.
No, it was great. It was great.
All right,
everyone. Well, that is our show for tonight. I want to thank you all for listening. Our guest tonight has been Karina Sables. Her last name is Sables, S-A-E-B-E-L-S. She has written a fascinating new book called The Collectors, A Canadian UFO Experience, which is all about her lifelong experiences, sightings and abductions, and face-to-face encounters with UFOs and ETs. And if you'd like to contact her directly, her email address is spiritlight@shaw.ca. That's all one word, spiritlight@shaw.ca. And that's it for tonight. Thank you all for listening. I hope you can join us next week when we bring on another exciting guest to talk about UFOs and the paranormal. Until then, have a wonderful evening and a great week. Bye now.